I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hello, welcome to the Curzon Film Podcast. This week, the ups and downs of relationships as we weather divorce with Adam Driver in Marriage Story, and we weather weather with Eddie Redmayne in The Aeronauts. And she's playing another rogue one. We speak to Redmayne's co-star Felicity Jones about her ballooning career. I'm Jake Cunningham, and this week I'm joined by two guests who are going to cut through the clouds of cinematic conversation. Ella Kemp.
Hello.
And Kelly Powell.
Hello.
And he's only here as ballast. Sam Howlett.
I hate they're doing this podcast.
Hello, everyone. How are we doing?
Good.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
It's lovely to have you with us. Should we start with a nice divorce?
Shall we?
Lovely. Yeah,
that's what we love to do on this record, first thing on a Monday morning. Let's just dive right into Marriage Story, a film that no one's really found emotionally devastating or affecting and hard to talk about, but we are going to try. This is the new film from Noah Baumbach, the director of The Squid and the Whale, and the Meyerowitz stories, and Frances Ha and Mistress America. He's returned with a new family drama that ranks among, for me, his very best, and is a front runner for acting awards over the coming months. This particular one's about stage director, played by Adam Driver, and his wife, an actress played by Scarlett Johansson, as they struggle through a grueling coast-to-coast divorce that pushes them to their personal and creative extremes. So I mentioned a handful of Noah Baumbach films there. I just want to gauge from the room, how are we feeling about Noah Baumbach prior to this? I'm a very big fan, despite the fact, for me, he has one film on, one film off. Literally tracked back through his career, and it's that for me. But Ella?
Yeah, I would agree. There are some of his films that I really love. I think Frances Ha is great. I found the Meyerowitz stories very charming. But Mistress America for me does not work at all. Squid and Whale I thought was okay. So going into Marriage Story, I thought I will watch this film because it's a Noah Baumbach film. And I'm sure a lot of other people will love it. And maybe I will like it. That's what I thought going into it. And now I'm on the opposite side of the spectrum. And I am the person who loves it and says to everyone, have you heard of Noah Baumbach? He's amazing.
Okay, and have we got that level of enthusiasm over this side?
Sorry.
Yeah, I really like Noah Baumbach. Sorry, I say Baumbach. I don't know why. Maybe it's because I'm Jewish. But yeah, I really love him. I agree that you don't always know it's going to be quite on point. Mm. But I always look forward to what he's going to do next. I loved Squid and the Whale, and Frances Ha again is great for me. And this one is his best so far, I think. And you can feel the trajectory of him growing up as both a man and a director. I think you can track his sort of growth and what he's interested in. I mean, obviously, divorce has been a topic that he likes to delve into, but he's doing it with more and more depth, I think, and maturity as he gets older.
Yeah, it's interesting what films land with him. Like Squid and the Whale really landed so well for him and really launched him as a big talent. And then Frances Ha felt like a really sort of big kind of film at the moment. Mistress America, I like that film, but I don't think it landed quite as well as he hoped it would. And then While We're Young seems to have really disappeared into the ether. And then he did that weird Brian De Palma documentary that kind of fell out of nowhere, and he wrote Madagascar 3. So he's had a very eclectic...
Which is apparently a really good entry in the Madagascar
series. Oh, I'm sure.
It's very good. Yeah.
Is that da-da-da-da-da-da circus?
No.
Afro circus.
What is that?
I don't know what you've been watching, Sam.
Anyway.
Well, I think he's really interesting director. He's one of those directors who you can say he just makes the same film. Mm-hmm. But I'll happily watch him make that same film.
Yeah.
And Kelly, I think you're right. With the way that he changes his feeling as a person and as a director, if we look back at Squid and the Whale, and the focus there is on the Jesse Eisenberg character, who's very much a teen, and that film is about kind of frustration and anger.
Yeah, I remember
anger.
That film being very angry and very awkward and very kind of pessimistic. And
yeah.
Well, he has also spoken about divorce in the sense that he wrote The Squid and the Whale as a child of divorce and feeding that kind of personal perspective into this. And this one being very much about his experience as an adult going through those things. And
yeah, this one, I think Marriage Story is a film that's very respectful of that process.
Oh, yes.
Mm. Which is perhaps the most surprising thing about it. That, like, the caricatures that we expect to find in these divorce stories of, like, warring couples and lawyers who are just in it for the money, and everyone's just, like, it's like Kramer versus Kramer stuff. This isn't that.
No.
Yeah, well, even, like, so the supporting characters, so Alan Alda and Ray Liotta are kind of at two opposite ends of the spectrum of the sort of hit the of Adam Driver's divorce lawyers. They are slightly caricatured, but they are much more than that.
Mm.
They are those kind of, one's a very nice guy, one's a very tough kind of shark lawyer, but they are both kind of, they're presented very realistically, I think. And then Laura Dern, the same. She's a little bit of a larger-than-life celebrity divorce lawyer.
She's her Big Little Lies character.
Yeah, pretty much. But she does have, she has that really great speech, and there is much more to this character than would be had she been in another film, I think.
Well, you can tell that, like, he's written these characters as though, like, this is their life, this is their work, that's what they do, you know? It's very much a matter of fact that they do this all day, every day. And it's kind of like, they're not evil, they're just doing what they need to do in a system that has been created for this to exist. But also, he's been quoted as saying that it's a love story as well. So I think for him, it was very much telling the story of these two people's love story of their marriage in the breakdown.
Mm.
And because of that, it's got such a heart, and it's so warm, and you get to know these people not as two ends of the spectrum trying to fight each other. It's just like a necessary sort of thing they have to go through, but they still have love for each other and their son, and they're just trying to figure it out, which I think makes it such a universal story, because so many people have gone through this, and it's a terrible thing to go through, but they still love each other, which is so nice.
And something that I really admire about the film, and something that's really strong about the script, is that it doesn't give us the golden years. There's a bit kind of maybe 15, 20 minutes in where Scarlett Johansson's character sits down with Laura Dern, and that conversation is, right, get us up to speed about your relationship and why is this happening. And she starts that story, and I felt trained that we are now going to flashback, and we're going to see, right, here is them, right, in the, like, rose-tinted glasses. This is absolutely, like, the perfect representation of that relationship, so that we as an audience can feel it, so that then it's, like, more of a heartbreaker when we see the divorce go through. And it's really brave not to show that and to just try and build that love during the conflict.
Yeah.
Mm.
And not let us as an audience escape this situation, where it would be easier to just live in the memory, but we have to grind it out.
Well, there are romantic moments and a big old montage as well, but the where it's placed, like, as much the way it's written as the way it's directed and shot is so, yeah, it's so different. It doesn't go back to years before, like you say, but it does kind of whip through why they love each other and the kind of things for you to latch onto. And where it comes in the film is really smart, because it can make you think, oh, this is going to be the tone of the whole film. It's going to be a big tearjerker. And then he just takes it away. And then you have to think, oh, is that lovely, warm feeling going to come back? Am I going to get more of why they love each other? But it's just really well measured, and you never get too comfortable in a certain feeling, either too extreme or too plain or anything. It's just so perfectly balanced the whole way throughout, I think.
Yeah, it's a really interesting film tonally, because there are, as we said, this is a very, very emotional film, and you do go through the ringer. And there's one scene in particular that people are talking about, which is really heart-wrenching and really heartbreaking, and it's the absolute powerhouse performances off each other. But there's also a lot of kind of like screwball comedy in the film.
So
the
funny.
The scene when she's trying to serve him divorce papers in the kitchen with her sister is really funny, and like something out of Bringing Up Baby. And there's also the scene where he's got the observer around to see how he is with his son.
He has that's incredible physical comedy.
Yeah.
Like his whole
really,
body.
Really funny. But there's also these there's these two like musical moments as well that Baumbach just lets play on for a really long time. And both those songs are from the same musical. They're both from Company. And they both kind of really, in a really smart way, tell you about what that character is going through at this moment in this process. And it's a really smart, really beautiful way. And both actors absolutely nail it.
Yeah. I mean, there are so many awards that this film will be going for. I would think, we've got original screenplay, cinematography, supporting actors, directors, and it would be great to delve into all of them. But I just want to focus in on what I think is maybe its best shot, which is Adam Driver as best actor.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned his performance where he does a musical number from Company, which is an incredible moment. But I think this is absolutely the finest work he's done. We love a lip wobble. The man can
beautiful.
Wobble with the best of them.
Yeah. Yeah, he's so good in this film. And Baumbach actually said that he and Adam Driver spoke about, oh, you should sing Being Alive in a film one day. And that was before he even wrote the script for this. So that's what that
So this
from.
Whole film
is
was
just
made.
Just to have Adam Driver sing Being Alive.
Cool. I'm into
it. I think
it.
He is currently definitely the front runner for best actor. He's got competition probably from Robert De Niro and Joaquin Phoenix. Interesting to see how those campaigns will go. But I think this could be the year of Driver. We've already got him coming up in the report next week, and also Rise of Skywalker. So it's a big year for the big.
Imagine if you win the best actor for Star Wars.
Yes.
It's crazy that he is in those films, but you still you forget about all of that when he's in a film like this.
Yeah.
But then when you do pop on a Last Jedi and he's there, he's so good.
He makes complete sense in every film he's in, and then. Yeah, as you say, Kelly, in every film he's in, I just nod and I'm like, oh yeah, this is the only role Adam Driver has ever played every single time. And he just does it so well. And I also want to say that before Marriage Story, like with Baumbach, there was a lot of hype around Adam Driver. And I was like, cool, I guess other people get it. Marriage Story is the film that changed it for me. I'm if you're not, you'll be obsessed with him after this film. He's so good.
Yeah.
He's the best.
That dude is wide.
He is a wide boy. And there's lots of other brilliant things about the film. Robbie Ryan's the cinematography. He did weirdly Sorry We Missed You, which is just like this flat, kind of stark, grey film to the film's credit. But this is wildly different. He did a similar thing. He shot I, Daniel Blake for Ken Loach and Meyerowitz Stories for Noah Baumbach as well. A really great cinematographer. Recently did The Favourite as well. And we've got a Randy Newman score here that doesn't hide the fact it's Randy Newman. This is good.
Plinky, plonky, pleasant piano. Yeah.
Yeah, really good.
Divorce, but fun.
Yes. And
that's
so
the tagline, isn't it?
I've seen that everywhere.
So definitely one for fans of Squid and the Whale, Meyerowitz Stories in particular from the Baumbach catalogue. And that's going to be in cinemas next week, as well as coming to Netflix very soon as well. But we must move on to our second film, which is The Aeronauts. It's set in 1862, and the scientist James Glacier, played by Eddie Redmayne, and widow Amelia...
Is that his real name, James Glacier?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. That's cool.
And widow Amelia Wren, played by Felicity Jones, are embarking on a remarkable mission to go where no human has gone before, 37,000 feet into the sky in a hot air balloon. As they begin their journey into the unknown, we flash back to their reasons for taking this momentous step. Ella, you spoke to Felicity Jones, one of the stars of this film, all about it, and it's bringing back together the dream team from The Theory of Everything.
I did indeed, and it is indeed. We chatted about the essentials for being in a hot air balloon, the reunion that everyone was waiting for, the historical background and accuracies, and I learned a lot and we had a lovely chat. Hello, Felicity Jones. I'm here on the Curzon podcast and we're here to talk about The Aeronauts, your new film.
Fantastic.
First of all, congratulations on the film. And I want to start off by asking a very simple question. What do audiences need to know about Amelia Wren, and who is, where did she come from in the real world?
Amelia Wren, she's a bit of a wildcat character. One of the people that she is based on is this woman, Sophie Blanchard, who was quite an extraordinary 18th century aeronaut. And Amelia's backstory is identical to Sophie's. And for the film, we actually, it's a sort of top hits of ballooning history. And we took all the best moments and put them into the film. But Sophie Blanchard used to fly solo. She actually, her husband was also an aeronaut and he died. And after he died, she redesigned the shape of the balloon because she thought there was a better version, a more aerodynamic version. And she would set off fireworks from the balloon. She would fly at night. It was the time and the space where she felt most happy and most herself was up in the sky with the stars.
Amazing. She, and in the film you can tell she is just this amazing firecracker character. And she comes in at a point after you've had these incredible roles in Rogue One and just this year on the basis of sex. I wonder what attracted you to this role, this kind of strong female character, as it were, but she seemed quite different as well.
Yeah, it was the combination of playing someone who I loved her humour, I loved her immediacy, I loved that she didn't overthink things. The action side of it was a real gem. I was desperate to come back and do some action after making Rogue One, and to make something that felt a really optimistic film, that it really is a family film. It's a real ride and real sort of entertainment. I just felt very excited about making something that was going to be great fun.
Mm. And visually it is so entertaining and exciting, and all of the action. How was it doing, how did you prepare for such a physical role, and how was it filming those scenes?
Well, it's always quite a sort of baptism of fire preparing for these films. And I was working with an acrobat who just was literally showing me the ropes. You know, I was learning all these, they call them silks, and you climb up these long silk pieces and you learn to do, they call them binds and knots, so that you can be suspended very, very high up in the air just using the ropes and your and the strength of your body. So that gave me a lot of confidence in playing Amelia, because I thought, well, if I feel comfortable, you know, floating up in the sky, then that'll work for playing her.
Yeah, and I'm thinking in particular of the scene later in the film when she just undergoes such an amazing physical transformation as well. And how do you kind of prepare for those conditions as well? The temperature,
well,
I guess.
Yeah, you can't really prepare. What we found was doing cold acting is actually really difficult. And Tom would keep shouting from behind the camera. He says, "You don't look cold enough. You don't look cold enough." And we were sort of doing the full, you know, like shivering, shaking back and all that stuff. And then so we thought, well, why don't we put our hands in freezing cold ice water just to give you that immediate sense of what it's like to be cold? So we were sort of trying all these different, we ended up getting so method on it. We were trying all these different techniques just to get a real sort of naturalism, because the camera, it was so close to us, you know, it was three of us in a basket, and so the camera picks up everything, so you couldn't, you know, not that you want to, but you couldn't phone anything in or sort of you couldn't, it had to feel very, very precisely drawn.
And being the three of you in the basket, how was it reuniting with Eddie Redmayne, who you starred alongside? But this is a very different kind of relationship, and it's, I found it so refreshing to see this dynamic where it's not, you know, they're not husband and wife, there's not, it's not a romantic relationship. How was building that?
Yeah, I think in order for us both to come back to work together, it had to feel that it was going to be very different from Theory of Everything, and I don't think would have wanted to repeat that in any way, shape or form. So part of the appeal was that they were such different characters, that the dynamic between them was very different, and to work with Eddie, who I just have such trust with. We'd built that up from making a film together, and we have very similar ways of working. We both like to improvise. We've both made films in America with a lot of improvisation that we've carried with us throughout working together. And he has such a lightness, Eddie. And I think we complement each other in that way, that we sort of have complementary personalities.
Mm. Is there room for much improv in a hot air balloon?
Yes, surprisingly. When you're stuck in a basket together for about 10 weeks, you kind of need to think on your feet, otherwise it can... Well, that's what we were worried about, because we thought, well, how is this going to be interesting? You keep coming back to this basket. You know, it's just two of them for most of the film. And so we had quite a long rehearsal time where we were in a studio with a mock-up of the basket, just thinking, okay, what? How do we keep this fresh? What do we do? And a lot of it was finding different levels, finding their different areas. We did approach it very much like we were rehearsing a play.
Mm. And this, I'm fascinated by the threat of the basket and going up with nothing. And I want to ask you, what if you had to go up in a basket, probably not to return? What do you take? What do you do in the kind of desert island disc kind of way, but more just balloon?
Yeah. Oh, what? I like that. Yeah. What do you take with you? Well, what's nice with a gas balloon, you can, there's a tradition, because it's not like a hot air balloon where you have the, you know, you have the flame and you're constantly have that noise. It's very, very quiet. And so they have a tradition when you first fly in a gas air balloon that you have to take a bottle of champagne with you.
Oh, wow.
And you have a drink during the flight. So I think you definitely have to have a bottle of champagne.
If it's tradition, you have to.
I mean, come on. And then I would take with me photographs of friends and family. Is that a bit corny?
It's allowed.
It's allowed. Real photographs, not just digital photographs.
With the frames and anything?
I think, no, one of those kind of like 80s books that has all the plastic bits in it. So I would take that with me so that I could remember things. And then I would probably take some salt and vinegar Walker's crisps, because they're my faves. what, am I allowed anything else?
Whatever you need. It's a long journey.
I think I would probably take... It'd be nice to have some sort of music. Whether you could take... I've got one of those... which makes me sound like a real granny, but I've got one of those Roberts radios, which I move around the house, depending on what... I'm such a sort of technophobe, depending on which room I'm in. So I'd probably take that with me, because you've got, you know, got access to all the radio stations.
Definitely.
You've got music, chatting, perfect.
Sorted. So I have one last question, moving from the aeronauts into the future. Looking at the incredible women from history that you've played, both very real and reconstructed, is there anyone in your mind that you kind of think maybe one day that would be the dream part to bring this woman to life?
Yeah, well, if you have any ideas, they're welcome. That is what you are constantly hunting for, looking back through. I mean, particularly I'm getting more involved with development. And so constantly looking for books and characters and women in history. You know, that is the search to find the next role. Mm. But I'm just constantly reading articles and looking for things. I think you never quite know what it is until it hits you. It's a funny thing. I sort of sometimes think, oh God, I should get on with playing, you know, Juliet and some of the before I get too old, some of those kind of seminal Shakespearean roles, or as you like it. So I think probably my bucket list would be getting some of those Shakespearean heroines under my belt.
Excellent. Well, there is always room for more, and I'm sure the world will definitely welcome it.
Oh, good. Thank you
so much for talking to me.
Lovely. Thanks very much.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So, the Aeronauts, Ella.
Yes.
I think for me, this is a bit Downton Abbey's Gravity.
Sure.
For better or for worse, would you say this is a mint Aeronauts?
where do okay. I go with that?
Yeah, okay.
yes. Yeah, sure. If you're asking whether I enjoyed this film, I did. I thought it was really nice. And as you say, yeah, I felt like the little bits of Gravity in there. I think on paper, it ticks a lot of boxes that I could sometimes find a little bit boring. It's going far back in history and focusing on these two reliable actors, but I can't say the two actors that I've ever been extremely excited to see do something completely different. But I think they're really pushed to their limits, like as much individual and physical as the relationship that they had with each other. And then visually as well, I think it really, I mean, it makes the most of being so far, like high up in the sky. And it's like, oh, we're going so high. Let's go really big and intense.
Yeah,
and
absolutely. Once the balloon is up there and we're having to hang out in the basket in the sky.
Good.
It's beautiful. Like, it looks amazing up there. I think the films to kind of draw comparisons to are certainly like survival stories like Gravity, but it's not as so in the moment like that one. Mm-hmm. Structurally, it's perhaps most similar to 127 Hours, mm-hmm. the way that it will bounce around and mm-hmm. Cleverly weave between the events in the present, the events in the past. And then there's this kind of magical, realist feeling to it that's maybe akin to Life of Pi. And those moments, I think, is where it really shines. When things are on the ground, when it's a bit like, you cannot go up in the sky. You cannot monitor the weather. Well, sir, I say that I can.
You'll see. I'll show you.
Yeah, all of that stuff's...
sounds.
It has
That's
to
how
be.
Eddie Redmayne sounds.
Right.
It has to be there, but it's not. Those aren't the most interesting bits in the film. That being said, there are those great moments in The Lost City of Zed.
When I was going to say, yeah. This sounds like Lost City of Zed in
the Geographical Air? Society. Just like old men screaming at each other what you can.
This society will not support you on this endeavour.
It is a lot of that, but I mean, yeah, wade through that and there's a lot to enjoy here.
But what I did like about the storyline and the way it's set up is that I think when you've got these big missions and these big physical geographical adventures and you've got the flashbacks, sometimes I get annoyed when the whole film is like building up to the big mission that's going to happen in the last 20 minutes or something, and you think, well, the mission's obviously going to happen, otherwise you wouldn't have made a film about it, so the stakes are a bit lower. So I quite like that here you go up in the big mission from like the first 15-20 minutes, so you've got that playing out the whole time, and I think that it makes it more exciting because, well, I didn't know much about the mission, so it's like, well, I know they're up there, I know they did it, but I don't know how they're going to get back down. So it's more, yeah, there's more to worry about, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. And along the way, there's lots of good support as well. I want to please flag Himesh Patel, who we saw in Yesterday. Mm-hmm. And although I have my reservations about that film, I think everyone kind of agreed that this was immediately a star.
Yeah.
And although he's in a supporting role here, when he's on the screen,
it's lovely.
You realize, it's just
so nice to see him.
Yeah. And like someone being great and clearly just on a trajectory that we all hope is going to lead mm-hmm. to big roles. I think he's already signed up as well to the Christopher Nolan film Tenet, and really looking forward to that as well. And along with Himesh Patel, there is Posey the dog, hero, great moment, like real like shocking little dog joke in the first 10 minutes that will surprise people.
Mm-hmm. Surprising dog joke. Well,
yeah. I was into that a lot. Mission.
My heart dropped.
Yeah. And who knows whether that actually happened. But I think that's something that the film leans into, because who's to say how much of this actually did happen?
Yeah. So that's what I found very interesting about this film, is that while watching it, I didn't question that it happened, because I thought, why would you make this up? But it turns out this flight did happen. Two people went up in the balloon. James Glacier went up in the balloon. He did not go up with Amelia Wren. Amelia Wren does not, as Felicity Jones said, Amelia Wren does not exist. And they made her based on these two real female aeronauts, which is great. But yeah, it's quite interesting that they stuck to history but changed the people taking part in history to make room for this woman in the balloon. And I mean, I think the film is great for it, because I think also Felicity Jones has played a lot of these characters that are quote unquote strong women, and a reservation that I've had about her characters is that they are strong women who often tend to talk about being strong women, and it's kind of in a very script friendly way, but I often don't believe it, whereas this role is so much more demanding and physical and exciting, and like she's in charge in this balloon, and Eddie Redmayne's just got a like, he's silly.
Yeah, but he's just sat down in the basket, wet-eyed, staring
foolish
into the distance. Yeah. But in the distance, there is some great visuals mm-hmm. of London, and it was really nice to see the West India docks in their correct position that had been rebuilt.
I noticed that. Like,
yeah, nice and correct. Sure. We love to see it. We love to see geographically correct London. All right. So that is The Aeronauts, which is in cinemas. And on home cinema, Sam, we've got a lovely collection.
Yes, we do. This week on Curzon Home Cinema, we have Werner's Originals.
And what's that?
Werner's Originals is a collection of Werner Herzog's finest works.
Oh my god!
Oh, great. I mean,
Fitzcarraldo.
I mean, you've literally just scared off anyone who was ever gonna.
If you want to stare into the abyss this weekend, stare into my works.
Wow.
No.
So if you want to stare
Grizzly
into
Man.
Werner's abyss. Yep, Grizzly Man
yeah.
is on there.
Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans.
An insane film.
Really weird film, but a great film.
Yeah, absolutely. If you've never seen a Herzog film, get into them. Yeah, you'll have a great old time. So that's on Curzon Home Cinema, and Marriage Story will be in cinemas in a couple of weeks. Aeronauts in there now. If you've got any thoughts on any of those films, let us know by tweeting at Curzon Cinemas, or you can do so by getting in touch with us directly on Twitter. I'm there as at Jake H. Cunningham. Ella, you're there as?
At Ella underscore Kemp.
Kelly?
KS underscore Powell.
And Sam?
Sam Howlett underscore one.
Thanks so much for listening to the podcast. If it's your first time doing so, please subscribe. You can do so on iTunes, Acast, Spotify, wherever you get your pods. And when you're there, if you could leave us a review or a comment, that'd be absolutely wonderful. But until then, I think it's time to separate. So it's a bye-bye from me.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.